Monday night's history. If you were to go off in search of a deserted traditional Irish village, then I bet you wouldn't start in regional South Australia. It's not the most obvious place in the world to start looking, is it? But for Flinders University archaeologist Susan Arthur, it was most definitely the right place. Years of research finally paid off when Susan and her colleagues finally unearthed the remains of a cluster of houses dating back to the 1850s that were buried, would you believe, underneath a paddock near the town of Kapunda in South Australia. But how did those buildings get there and who lived in them? Susan joins us to tell the story of this intriguing Irish settlement. Susan, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello, Philip, and thank you very much for having me on.
Great to have you with us. The remains of the buildings you found are on the outskirts of Kapunda. Now, that's nearly 80 kilometres north of Adelaide. You say they were built just like a traditional clachan that used to dot the Irish countryside. Describe what they would have looked like originally.
So there's a couple of things involved there, because you have an image in your head, or maybe lots of people do, of a traditional Irish cottage. So, you know, like one room deep, it's quite long, it's got a thatched roof, it's got small windows. And this was the style that many of the houses were built on, Kapunda, at Baker's Flat at this site. And there are a few photographs, there are very, very few photographs, but there are six photographs of houses on Baker's Flat that were photographed in 1906. And when you look at them, it looks like you are looking at an Irish settlement. It is so clearly Irish in style. Mm. So that's the Irish style of building. But then compounded with that, what makes this particular area so interesting is the clachan. And a clachan in Ireland was a very traditional way of living and farming. And it was almost like a village or community, although they tended not to have things like shops or churches or any of the usual things that you would have in a town. So it was really like a selection of people, usually linked by kin. They were related to each other. And they farmed the land communally. They lived close together. Mm. And a lot of the decisions were made together. And this was in the up to the 19th century, the mid-19th century in Ireland, was actually the most common form of...
What, so a group of houses, would they surround a common, or there'd be a common adjacent?
There would often be something called an infield, which was an area of good land closest to the group of houses, and that would be used for growing some crops. And then there was an area outside of called an outfield or commonage, and that was then used to manage the animals. Mm. So yeah.
What were the buildings made of?
The buildings on Baker's Flat were made of the materials that people could access at the time, and bearing in mind that a lot of these people were very poor. So a lot of the buildings, there actually is no evidence of them except in the historical records and court records, where they're described as hovels of tin and tarpaulin and hessian sacks. So they're very like ephemeral buildings that would have disappeared quite quickly when people moved out. But the buildings that we were excavating were dug into the side of the hill. So if you sort of think about Burra and the miners at Burra who dug into the side of the creek to make, well, quite elaborate homes in some instances, this was not quite as elaborate, but it was using the slope of the hill to dig almost like a right angle. So you had a floor and then a wall, which offered shelter. And then on top of that, using whatever was available. So what we have found evidence of is using mud, using railway sleepers, using hessian sacks, all to provide a wall. And in some instances, very substantial walls made of mud and stone. And then they would have been whitewashed. So they would have been quite spectacular in their, you know, like prime, because they would have stood out in the landscape as being white.
Mm. Now, this was quite a rare find when you found it, wasn't it? Because it's the only known clachan that's ever been found outside Ireland or Britain. I mean, there were a common form of settlement in Ireland, informal clusters you're talking about, maybe up to 30 or 40, and then with farmland adjacent, but they've never been found outside of Britain or Ireland, and this is the first time. So, yes, well, credit to you. Why were the Irish in Capunda in the 1800s anyway?
They were in Capunda because there was a copper mine there, right. And they came primarily to work as labourers. The area where they then settled at Baker's Flat was very close to the mine. It's literally a paddock away from the mine. So it would have been very convenient. It was also available rent-free to the Irish when they arrived, which went very well for a number of years because they were, you know, working in the mine and nobody particularly wanted access to that land. Mm-hmm. It did become a little bit more difficult when the legal landowners wanted access to the land.
I thought the Cornish had the mortgage on being expert copper miners. The Irish were good at it too, were they?
Well, there is certainly evidence in the historical records of the Irish being good at copper mining, but the Cornish really were renowned
as
the best.
They were, weren't they? Yeah.
And the Irish in this instance were coming mainly as labourers to work in the mines. So the Cornish skills.
Right. This presumably was part of the great Irish emigration that occurred after the Irish potato famine in the mid-19th century. Was it when Ireland's population, you know, was decimated and then fell rapidly as people emigrated. They went all over the world. In fact, Ireland's population never really ever recovered.
Well, no, indeed, because, say, the famine lasted for, you know, like, say, over a period of 5 years, during which the population dropped from, I think, about 8 million. Then 1 million died of hunger. Another 1.5 million emigrated, and that sort of started the great Irish diaspora and migration, which continued right through to today. And even now, on the entire island of Ireland, there's still, I think, just about 6 million people, so
That's right.
Never recovered.
That's right.
That.
It never really ever recovered, no. No. Anyway, the Irish are all over the world now, particularly in Australia. Did they come to work at the mine because there were other Irish people there or not?
See, it's really interesting, isn't it? This is why I love history and archaeology, because you think there's a simple answer and then you realise there's not such a simple answer. Mm. In Ireland and South Australia, a lot of the migrants to South Australia came from County Clare on the west coast. Mm-hmm. Now, in 1840, a man called Charles Harvey Baggett rented a ship and took himself, his family, and about 220 Irish migrants to South Australia. He was acting as a land agent for an Anglo-Irish landlord. So he went around looking for the best land that he could buy and then farm. And he ended up choosing land near Capunda, which didn't exist as a town at that stage. So he was there in 1840. 1842, his son discovered copper. At the same time as another man, Dutton discovered copper in the area as well. They managed to get the land and started this copper mine. Now, all of the anecdotes talk about Baggett being quite benevolent towards the Irish, and he had certainly brought out a number of them on the Burman with him. Then there's also talk of them going to Capunda to join Baggett. Mm-hmm. So I think the Irish started off in Capunda because they were, you know, knew that there was a good landlord up there, that they could get some work there.
Right, okay.
And that then more and more came after at various times when the mine needed labour.
Sure.
To begin with, around the mid-1840s, the next big time they needed a lot of labour was after the Irish famine in the 1850s. Mm. And so I think it sort of was a whole host of things that came together that meant the Irish then arrived in Capunda.
Susan Arthur's my guest, a researcher at Flinders University in South Australia. She's discovered the remains of a deserted traditional Irish village, a clachan, near Capunda in north of Adelaide. Why didn't they live in town with the other miners?
The Irish were not particularly well regarded in South Australia.
Why is
they
that?
They weren't particularly welcome. And so there was probably a lot of angst between the two sort of communities. And in most instances, the Irish arrived, they, you know, came and they, you know, rented a house somewhere or a room somewhere in the city. But those who went out to the country would have been quite obvious, I think, as Irish. And I think really this land became available. Maybe the first few stayed on the land, then more people joined them on the land. And then they became this really strong community. And I think there was like quite a difference between the broader community in Kapunda and then this Irish community at Baker's Flat. And they certainly, I think, really absorbed their Irishness and kept that very much to themselves and kept that community quite enclosed in many ways.
The site today is just an ordinary paddock. there's no obvious signs of any Irish village.
Or wheat on it. Yes, it just looks like a field.
Exactly. What made you think there might be the remains of the Clachan there? And what was the farmer's reaction when you said you wanted to dig up his paddock?
Oh, look, the farmer is fantastic. And I was interested in doing some research on the Irish in South Australia because I'm Irish, I live in South Australia, and I really wanted to understand more about the Irish in South Australia. And unlike in the sort of the eastern states, there's been very little archaeology work done on the Irish in South Australia. So it's really breaking new ground in that respect. A colleague at Flinders mentioned that she had heard about this Irish community up near Kapunda that nobody had really done any research and that nobody knew very much about. So I went up to Kapunda and I talked to a few people there, and there's some really, sort of diligent community members who have kept that history alive over all these years, got permission from the farmer to walk on his land. And then the more research we did, the more interesting it became, and also the more interesting the landowner became, or interested the landowner became as well. So we've had some fantastic conversations about how that land has been used in his memory, because he remembers the last of the houses being knocked down so that farming could take place on the land with sort of more modern tractors. So he's been integral to the success of the project, really, because, well, without him, we couldn't be able to.
Exactly. What did you find? Did you find artefacts and relics of the Irish settlement?
We found quite a lot of artefacts scattered on the ground, little bits of ceramic and glass dating from the 19th century. So that's what indicated that we were in the right spot. And then we did some geophys on the ground to see what was underneath the ground, which sort of pinpointed some areas that we thought might be interesting to excavate. And then when we did excavate and found the remains of, because a long Irish house and a rubbish dump right beside it, which was full of 19th century artefacts. And that's really exciting, because the research comes together and you think, actually, this is really what we're thinking it is.
Yeah, exactly. But what happened to the village in the end, and why did they leave?
Well, there were a number of court cases over the years with the legal owners attempting to regain access to the land, and the Irish being just as adamant that they now had the land and they weren't giving it up. There was in the early 20th century, from sort of 1920s onwards, there was a court case that lasted about 10 years. And the end result of that was that the legal landowners then were able to regain access to the land. But by that point, it was only the really the people that had really dug in that were there. A lot of people had left and moved on. And as with, you'll see, the Irish would have gone to Burra to do some mining. They went further north as the land opened up and they were able to do farming. They went back down south towards Mount Gambier. And eventually, the only people left on the site were the old and the poor and the widowed, who eventually died out.
Yeah, interesting. Fascinating. Are you planning to do more work on the site or not?
I'd love to do some more work on the site. At the moment, still looking at what we have dug up during the 2016 and 2017 seasons, and getting that published and getting that information out into the public sphere as well. But there's certainly lots more work to do there. Sure. Not just for me, maybe other archaeologists can work on it as well.
Sure, fascinating. All right, Susan, terrific to talk. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Susan Arthur, who's a researcher at Flinders University. The things you can find when you start digging around, eh?
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.